Welcome to Be Customer Led, where we'll explore how leading experts in customer and employee experience are navigating organizations through their own journey to be customer led and the actions and behaviors employees and businesses exhibit to get there. And now, your host, Bill Stakos.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another week of Be Customer Led. Another amazing guest for you all. Michelle Garcia Dormini is Vice President for Consumer Experience Strategy at TrueCar. And she also has background at both Porsche and Cox Automotive. I'm really excited because Michelle has a very different role in what you might think about from a consumer experience strategy perspective. And I thought it was just really fascinating. I was like, this is really different. I've got to have Michelle on the show. Michelle, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
So, all right, first question everybody knows is talk to us a little bit about your journey, how you got into the role you're in today. How did that kind of manifest? Because you have this really fantastic background across research, strategy, tech, et cetera.
Sure. Yeah. So, I would have to start from the very beginning, really. I grew up in Miami. I'm off Calle Ocho. I was actually an ESOL kid, so English is my second language. And I'm the daughter of immigrants, you know. So we didn't have much, and they didn't go to higher education. But what they did have, and what they did instill in me, is this entrepreneurial spirit and empathy for others. So for the entrepreneurial spirit, that kind of drove me into getting my degree in finance. And what I love about finance is that it's in every conversation in business. It is business, right? It touches so many aspects of business. And so it really gave me a great foundation to start from. And then, you know, like I said, empathy, I mean, whether it's internal or external, people are why businesses exist. So having that that skill, that ability of empathizing with folks is really crucial, I think, for businesses. So those two skills really allowed me to succeed well beyond my finance degree. As you were mentioning before, I've worked in various companies, departments as well. Finance, obviously, but I went on to work in marketing, operations, new ventures, to where I am today, VP of Consumer Experience Strategy.
So let's talk a little bit about that role, because you focus on strategy development around the customer for TrueCar versus what, you know, traditionally, as I alluded to at the top of the podcast, you know, design or VOC, et cetera. Talk to our listeners a little bit about how that might be different at TrueCar for you. And I know that you kind of created the role too, which is pretty cool. Walk us through that and how you're creating value for TrueCar.
Sure. Yeah. Ambiguity is definitely not something I shy away from. I do enjoy that space. But so CX, the definition of it is really the sum of every interaction a customer has with a business, right? And when folks think about that, I think a lot of times they think about, you know, the customer support, chatbots, you know, our current existing products and services, right? And how we can make the experience easier for a consumer or a customer. And that's absolutely needed in a company. You absolutely need to have that. What I look at is the macro trends and things beyond our current state through the eyes of a consumer. And so that requires understanding how consumers interact, not only with our industry, but also other industries. You know, how do consumers interact with vendors? What are some of the macro trends that are impacting consumers in the future? Because the way I think about it is that consumers' lives are happening and behaviors are changing while we're building and while we're planning. And so it's good to gain insight to what potentially could lie ahead. And that's what I work on.
So thinking about creating that strategy, I mean, how do you go about doing that? Because there are a lot of CX leaders, sort of the classical even CX, or organizations that may not have, you know, the type of talent that and thinking that you bring to the table, Michelle. Like, what advice do you have for people to start doing that kind of work? Or, because I love that you're doing that one, because it's really important, because often, whether you're in airlines or travel or retail or, you know, hospitality, whatever it is, you often think about your customer and that journey and them checking into the hotel or maybe going to the dealer and buying a car, et cetera. But there really is so much more around that, right? The just generally even kitchen table economics that go into decision-making and purchases, particularly for something as expensive as a car. What advice do you have for people to start to think about maybe even integrating that into their work today?
Yeah. So when I think about strategy, I guess the first thing that I would recommend is a lot of reading. you're trying to understand not only your industry, but and your company, but also the world that surrounds it. Right. And so some of the reading material that I like to go through is, you know, obviously like industry magazines for mm-hmm. the automotive industry. So you've got Automotive News, which is a big publication within our industry. Another that I like to look at is, believe it or not, venture capital firms. They oftentimes will have newsletters and things that they're looking at out in the market. And so those are kind of interesting newsletters to get in your inbox. Harvard Business Review, obviously, you know, and other large research publications that are really great at getting some of that that foresight and insight. Market intelligence newsletters, you know, one that I like to look at is Morning Consult. And you know, all these things just arrive in your inbox every morning and you can just spend time reading them over coffee, right? So that's a good way to start thinking about strategy and, you know, just understanding more about what's going on around you. The other thing that I like to employ too is speaking to experts in their fields, right? And learning more from them about what's happening in their world. So those are good sources for kind of spurring that, you know, strategic thinking. Mm-hmm. And then as you're reading and you're gathering those insights, you know, you ask yourself, what do you do with this knowledge and information, right? What does it mean for your company? And you start looking at things from that lens. And I like to think about it like almost working on a piece of art. You start with a blank canvas. There's no right, no wrong. You're going out there. You're looking for things. You're maybe deciding what you want to paint, or you're deciding what colors to use. You're deciding, you know, what types of paint to use. And you may not even see the final product when you start to actually like, you know, figure all this stuff out or think through these things, but eventually it becomes something. And that's essentially what working through strategy is like. And when you get to the creation of strategy, that's where a few things come into play. You know, you've got deep listening and empathy. Again, I come back to that, right? And it's not that you're going to develop a piece of strategy that is, let's say, groupthink, right? You want to take all advice from people. You want to listen to their perspectives, listen to their concerns. And some of those things might get implemented. Some of those things you might look at and you think, huh, okay, I can tweak this one part and actually makes it stronger. So, you know, that deep listening and empathy mm-hmm. is really something that happens throughout the process. Secondly, you know, it should be about solutions, not necessarily about problems. While you want your strategy to be durable, you also don't necessarily want to talk yourself out of a good plan or a good strategy, right? Because there's dozens of what ifs, which kind of brings me to my third one, where it's like you want to de-risk your strategy, and you know, you can't plan for all contingencies, but it does need to go through some experimentation and testing of various hypotheses that encompass that strategy, and it needs to be flexible. You know, something you come back to. You know, I've seen it as frequent as every month. I've seen it every quarter. I mean, it really just depends on the strategy, the project. But it's something that, you know, you come back to and it lives. So you're constantly, you know, potentially iterating on it. What's interesting about also experimentation that I really love is that people get excited when they see experiments, and it's not even that they have to, provide amazing results, right? Mm-hmm. An experiment can fail, and that within itself is learning. And that's what makes it so amazing and so rewarding, because every experiment, you're learning something about your strategy and you're making it that much stronger. So de-risking and managing that risk and strategy, I think, is really crucial as well.
I love that last point a lot. I feel like so many companies just say, here's our strategy. They put it up on the wall. Everybody follows it, kind of filters down. And then that's what you're working on for the rest of the year. I can't tell you how many times in my 25-year career, I've looked back and I'm like, well, that's not going to work because we just did this and it failed. Like, what do we do next? We just move on, right?
Yeah.
Versus saying, how does a strategy need to change, right? I never really thought about strategy as a living thing. I love that view.
Well, and I think, you know, it does boil down to humans. We don't really love change, right? It's something that there's a lot of studies out there that talk about this. And so I think inherently we try to avoid it and we try to do everything we can to kind of control the situation and get things to fit within that box, that plan that we've established. And you do need a plan and you do need to execute on that plan. And you know, the shorter term that you have for a plan, the more likely you are to be able to implement it, without too many things kind of getting in the way, right? But the longer you go, it gets harder and harder. And because, you know, macroeconomics and different things that come into play. So, when you are looking at, you know, that longer term strategy, it does need to be a bit more flexible.
How far do you typically go out? I mean, I've seen, you know, McKinsey, or maybe I saw it in Harvard Business Review, like the strategy cone goes kind of like 10 plus years out, right? It's just, you know, that what is that sort of, you know, broader systemic change that we might see down the road versus, you know, 5 years out versus 3 versus 1? How far do you like to go out? Like, and do you have a preference in that as well? I'm just curious.
Yeah, it's a great question. It depends on the role, right? It depends on the role that I'm in. In this particular role, you know, future casting, looking beyond the potentially like, you know, 3 to 5 year mark is something that I look at a lot. But there are also times where I will be working on a project or initiative that is much shorter, you know, of a time frame. So within that 1 to 3, you know, potential year. So it really just depends on the project, depends on the role. But I really enjoy, you know, the conversations and the dialogue is, you know, in that future state, because there's so many different possibilities.
Yeah. Very cool. That's where my head is constantly going. So TrueCar is a really interesting company because you're a marketplace with multiple masters, as we had talked about. How do you think about the concept of managing experiences through two-sided marketplaces? Because that's got to be really difficult versus if you're a retail company, you've got the consumer. If you are a B2B, you might have, you know, you're a manufacturer, you've got B2B customers, right? You're looking at two different sides of the trade, which is a lot more complex. Like, is there anything different that you have to do to accommodate for that, do you think?
That's a good question. I would say, you know, there's definitely a push-pull sometimes that occurs. And that's not just even unique to TrueCar. I would say that, you know, my time working at Porsche, you know, we had our dealer network as well as our consumers that would purchase our products. So it really, I think, is something that is happening to a lot of businesses today, where they are actually being pulled in multiple directions by, you know, multiple masters. And so how do you manage that process? I think it comes down to balance. You know, it's a very artful balance of ensuring that you have your ear to the ground for every stakeholder. And also, I go back to empathy, you know, walking a mile in each of those stakeholders' shoes and understanding what their experience is with your brand, with your product, with your service. That will get you a long way, you know, having that insight.
So crucial. I mean, even for B2B companies on some level, right? You have to design products and services that are going to help that client deliver a better experience at the end of the day, right? Yeah. So really thinking about, you know, extending that empathy beyond sort of your direct consumer or customer is really critical. You know, Michelle, you use Strategizer and Lean Startup Methods in your role. If you can just take quick 30 seconds to, one, describe what those two are, because a lot of our listeners may not be familiar with them, but then why those two tools versus maybe others that are out there in the marketplace?
Yeah, so I can start with maybe giving a little bit of a definition on some of the tools that are out there. So, you know, one that a lot of folks probably know of is design thinking. And that's really an approach to a problem. It's how you think in developing a broad range of solutions for, you know, that problem. Mm-hmm. And solutions to one problem can be as broad as like a product, an app, a service. I mean, you're basically looking at the entire spectrum. Your lean startup method, it actually helps drive a better version of either an existing or new concept. So mm-hmm. the idea is create an MVP and iterate fast and constantly. So that's kind of the lean startup method. The strategizer method is really a framework that builds on design thinking and lean startup. It also brings in things like the business model canvas, mm-hmm. there's value proposition development. And it also speaks to how to manage your portfolio of ideation creation within large corporations. So it gives you a good blueprint from that perspective too. I think where people probably have the most questions probably come up is maybe between like design thinking and lean startup mm-hmm. and how those come together. I actually found a really interesting analogy for it that IDEO came up with, and they mentioned it's similar to like a sea turtle mom who lays more than 100 eggs each nesting yep. season, but only a handful of those successfully hatch and make it to sea. Mm-hmm. So design thinking helps you discover which eggs might have the best chance of survival. And, you know, you identify problems and design solutions to help them get there, right? And then once the baby sea turtle makes it to sea, lean startup improves the chances of it successfully reaching adulthood. So you're turning those proposed solutions into business models, rapidly testing with actual customers, getting mm-hmm. real feedback, right? And then you learn, you iterate towards product market fit. The important thing, honestly, with all these methodologies, I think, is to gain an understanding of each of them so that you can apply the best one for you and your business. So it's not necessarily like strategizer versus lean startup versus design thinking. Mm-hmm. It's really what makes the most sense for you and your company. You know, I think back to, I don't know if you've watched the Office TV show.
Sure.
but Michael Scott, I don't know if you remember this particular scene where he's following the GPS so intentively that he literally drives his car into a pond, right? Because that's where the GPS is telling him to go. Yeah. At the core, these methodologies are all about learning and, yep. and failing and learning, you know, and so don't be scared to use one, to use another, or to use a hybrid of them. You know, personally, that's what I do. I actually use a hybrid of them in any given point in time. You know, I will use one, the other, or multiple. So each has something to offer. And I think that's, you know, it's important to just understand what each of them can provide to you and your company.
Such important counsel. You know, even when I was in a CX, a customer experience leadership role, I would always tell my team, don't be married to the toolkit. It's just a toolkit, right? Figure out what is the right toolkit to help the business achieve its goal in a customer-friendly way, of course. I feel like in customer experience, generally, we don't have that philosophy. We say, here's what I've got to do. I've got to do a survey. I've got to do analysis. I've got to do whatever, right? But like, is that really the only solution? Probably not, right? Such good advice. Okay, so we've got strategy broadly, you're looking out, future casting, you're using different tools to be able to get there. How do you then connect that to the tactics of a business? So, you know, I'm sure the product and the development organization at TrueCar is pretty strong, right? Like, how do you bring them into all that and engage them in a way that they say, okay, Michelle said, here's where sort of consumers are going. Then what does product do with that as an example? And are there different tools that you're using or ways of engaging to make sure that the strategy you're creating is sort of making it back into the tactics of the company?
Yeah, so I go back to collaboration and teamwork, and really that's the key to, I think, developing a solid strategy and one that can survive execution, especially if you're not the owner of executing on all of the pieces of that strategy, right? And oftentimes you're not going to be. So sharing your strategy or even your ideas or what you're learning early with those other leaders across the company, I think is super crucial to developing that strategy and having that strategy implemented. Speaking with those function leaders and letting them know, hey, this is what I'm thinking, or this is what I'm seeing. What do you think? What are you seeing? It doesn't hurt. It's a good way to establish rapport, establish relationships within the company, and just being a sounding board for one another. And when it comes to that strategy actually being executed on, exactly to what you're describing, right? If product is actually going to be helping with implementation of a large portion of that product or a large portion of that strategy, there's no one in the company that knows their people better, their processes better, their pipeline, and how to really best execute within that function within the company. So ask them, hey, this is the strategy. This is a draft of it. What I'm thinking, what are your thoughts? Do you have any feedback for me? And how would you go about implementing this? Like, how would you go about executing on this? How many resources do you need? Do we have the proper resources? Do we need to go out and get some? So, you have those conversations, I think early on and throughout the process of developing the strategy, the more you'll get buy-in, which is also really key. It also helps them feel like they were part of the process. And so they're invested in the strategy and they're invested in its successful execution. Right. So, that oftentimes is where I see sometimes strategy fail, is where you're not bringing in other people into the conversation or you're not bringing them in, early enough to provide that feedback that's needed in order for the strategy to actually get executed.
So I wonder, that's really an important point. I actually wonder, as you think about sort of the future of work and, leaders' responsibilities, no longer telling people what to do, here's our strategy. It feels like we're moving in a direction where that is a little bit more collaborative and employees or the workforce has a little bit more of a say in what that strategy might be, and employees being a bigger source of innovation, perhaps. Is that something that you're seeing as well, or trying to maybe even bring into TrueCar? I'm just curious of your perspective there.
I think so. I think, great ideas and ways to make experiences better really come from every facet of the business, right? Folks that are having a conversation with a consumer and the consumer says, hey, you know what? It would be really cool if y'all did this. Like, that's awesome. That information is great to bring back into the business and, to see if it's something that can actually be executed and implemented. There's also, and that's at the ground level, right? Of things that are happening day to day. And it spreads the gamut, even from, what leadership might be looking at, right? And that broad spectrum. So, yeah, I see ideas, innovation really coming from all facets of a business and all players. And I think that, the key then is to have a good understanding of how strategy can be developed. Someone that is maybe in consumer support, right? And they hear, like, the example that I just gave, somebody say, this would be great. How does that individual then develop, the strategy or the conversation around that? I think having some of these strategy these ways of actually doing strategy in their toolbox, is a good thing for them to have, regardless of where they sit in a company.
Really, really good advice. Okay. I've got a couple more questions for you. One, I'm always thinking about how customer experience is evolving and changing. Particularly like the role of, chief experience officer or chief customer officer, because they've, in the last, let's say, 3 years, it feels like every company is now putting one into place. What I'm starting to see is two things happening. One, that chief customer or chief experience officer, is owning like everything post sales, or they are morphing more into a strategy role like yours. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious to hear your perspective on what that evolution might look like. Because what I'm hearing from you and the role that you're in absolutely has to be core to that function and that role. I just don't see it as much, which I think is really interesting. And I think a lot of folks are missing the trick.
Well, I think it's tough too when you have so much going on in current state to think, you know, future state as well. And that's why I believe that, you know, there are many companies that are looking at, you know, let's have folks focused on current state and ensuring the best possible outcome of current state, right? And maybe it includes, you know, some adjacent new areas of growth, but, you know, to look beyond that, let's put someone that actually has that capability, that available workload, if you will. So I think that's happening a lot in terms of, you know, CSO versus CXO. A traditional CSO role is, it requires broad thinking. So you're seeing issues confronting the company from a very broad perspective, as broad as like a CEO mm-hmm. would, right? But then you also are required to be a doer. So you're oftentimes working on operational day-to-day projects, working with, you know, cross-functional leaders to implement and execute mm-hmm. on strategy and plans. So you have to be able to see the forest as well as the trees. And that's why a lot of folks, I think, in CSO roles end up having a very rich background where they're not only a creative thinker, but they're also an influential collaborator. Mm-hmm. I'll bet many CSOs today are also thinking about experience, because in the experience economy, you know, that's what we're in. I mean, according to Gartner, you know, customer experience drives over 2/3 of customer loyalty, and that outperforms brand equity and price combined. You know, and a good customer experience also makes a person 5 times more likely to recommend a company and more likely to purchase in the future. So, I think it's absolutely key for, you know, CSOs to start thinking about experience, and vice versa. I think it's good for CXOs to start thinking beyond their current state and what could potentially come down the pipeline, so that they could also better prepare their departments for, you know, what could potentially lie ahead. It's funny because I in thinking about, you know, what you're asking, I do believe that there is a change that's happening when it comes to C-suites mm-hmm. in general, right? I don't know if you've seen where Huawei actually rotates their CEO every 6 months, which is interesting, right? We have a chief consumer officer who's responsible for product, marketing, branding, comms, customer support, affinity partners. So, I mean, it's, you know, I think that the C-suite in general is definitely changing, because this business landscape mm-hmm. is changing. And so it will definitely evolve and need to reflect, you know, the changes in business landscape.
Wow. Gosh, I need to dedicate like a whole show and talk to you about that now. I've got one last question for you. This has been a really inspiring conversation. I mean, it's already actually one of my favorite podcasts, so I'm really excited for that, to get this out now. Where do you get your inspiration from, Michelle?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, I would have to say that I get them from probably two sources. My grandfather, for one. He passed away several years ago, but he immigrated from Cuba. He was an entrepreneur, had a business in Cuba, which he lost when, you know, Castro took power, and he came with, you know, only what he had on his back. And he made a life here. And that is truly inspirational, you know, to me. There's this word that we use, you know, is luchar. So you just, you have the drive, you keep going, you do what you got to do, like, right? Grit. And that's, it's the grit, exactly. And that's what I find incredibly inspirational from my grandfather. And then I would say the second one is music. I love music. I definitely, you know, find it incredibly inspirational. Different songs for, you know, different moods and you know, whether it needs to get me going or I need to zen or what have you. But, you know, music is definitely my jam.
And it's so nice, actually, live music is coming back finally over the last couple of months, which is really a nice thing. I actually went to my first concert 2 months ago and I was like, it felt so good to be back out listening to live music.
100%.
This has been a great conversation. Michelle, thanks so much for joining me on the show and for sharing, you know, some of your insights with our listeners. It's great to have you on.
Thank you so much. I've really enjoyed it. Appreciate you having me on.
All right, everybody. Another amazing episode. Really, really great stuff.
We're out. Talk to you soon,
Thanks
everyone.
Thanks for listening to Be Customer Led with Bill Stakos. We are grateful to our audience for the gift of their time. Be sure to visit us at BeCustomerLed.com for more episodes. Leave us feedback on how we're doing or tell us what you want to hear more about. Until next time, we're out.